that was another piece of it, just realizing like, man, life is really short. You only have so much time to really get your stories out there.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Daniel Hess is a filmmaker and the founder of two Tony Productions. As a child, he enjoyed stories and developed an interest in writing. When Daniel was 10, his cousin and best friend, Anthony, died. In 2009, Daniel started his video production business. He named it Two Tony Productions in honor of his late cousin. Daniel produces music videos, short films, and commercial work.
Daniel Hess, I'm so happy to have you. How are you? Again, we were just talking earlier, but how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, I'm excited to have you because you are a filmmaker and the founder of Two Tony Productions. And I know you have an interesting story as to how the Two Tony Productions kind of manifested. It starts really with your childhood. So, Daniel, kind of just give us a little bit of background as far as, first, let's talk about your film. When did that start for you? Is that something as a kid that, looking back now, you can see you had some type of, I can only think of a big word. Huh?
Like having like some roots in the childhood there?
Yeah, like a proclivity. I'm trying to not use a big word, but like a proclivity toward film as a kid. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, growing up, I don't know. I never really like made films because I find that a lot of like filmmakers I've met over the years, that's like, they're like, yeah, when I was a kid, I would like run around and I had this camera, and that was never really a thing for me. It was more kind of watching films. I grew up watching, like really being into like Godzilla, especially. And just found like a lot of creativity in imagining like stories of like Godzilla fighting some monster or something like that. So it was a lot of just kind of like taking in movies and appreciating the stories that they kind of brought, but never really crossing into the boundary of thinking about making films until much later into my later like high school years did that sort of come about.
So when you were watching Godzilla and loving it, were you writing your own stories, or were you maybe creating stories in your head, or it was just strictly like, I just love film. I like watching movies.
I mean, a lot of it was just enjoying the movie watching, but there was a lot of just imagination of like, you know, after it'd be done, it'd be like almost like fan fiction. Like, what was he going to do after this? Or what creature is going to pop out of the ocean and have a big fight with him on like Monster Island or whatever?
Right. I think that's so funny. What about King Kong?
A little bit of King Kong. I mean, King Kong versus Godzilla, of course, when I was a kid.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, but not so much. It was more just Godzilla. I don't know what it was. Something about him just kind of fascinated me as a kid.
Yeah, I can relate because I've always loved stories, and stories in the form of books, because I did read a lot. But I've also always loved movies, and my mother loved classic movies. And so we were always watching like old movies from the 30s, 40s, 50s. And I still, to this day, it's just one of my favorite things to do. After I get off this phone call with you, I will probably go watch a film. It's just a wonderful, engaging form of storytelling.
It is. And it's really good to sit down to like the classics, because I feel like those get overlooked more than ever.
Yeah.
And that's just some like really great, rich storytelling in those old like style films.
Yeah. So let's talk about how that path kind of opened for you. So when you got into college, or when, you know, after you graduate from high school, did you have an idea that, oh, now I think this is something I want to study, film?
Yeah, that's a funny story too, because I mean, originally all throughout high school, well, I guess the last year when you start really trying to pick your major for college, It was actually pharmacology for me.
That's a huge difference.
Yeah. So as I went into everything, I started realizing like, wow, this is not the most exciting field. I really wasn't as good as I thought I was in the math side of things. Mm-hmm. And I found myself really just randomly writing a lot again that summer before college. And a close friend of mine was really into film, and that's what he was going to do. And he sort of brought it to my attention, like, hey, you know, you like to write. This is kind of like a medium that you can write and then create something out of it. Why don't you think about it? And I looked into it and was just like, I think it was right before August, maybe July of that summer, yeah, where I was like, all right, guys, I'm switching everything over to pretty much everyone's like amazement that I was doing this, and made it work. And that's what I ended up going to school for, is studying film at Towson.
So tell us about, before we talk more about your film school experience, tell us about Tony.
So Tony was my cousin and really close friend growing up. And when he was 14 years old and I was only 10 at the time, he actually passed away from cystic fibrosis, which, I mean, being 10 years old, like the concept of death is something that should be really far removed from you. So kind of seeing it firsthand was, I mean, it was huge in a devastating way to not only me, but the whole family. And it just changed kind of my outlook for things. You know, I always kind of say that was like, if there was a childhood there, that was sort of the time in which the innocent phase sort of ended with everything. Mm-hmm. So when it came time for the production company, the Two Tony Productions, that's actually where the namesake comes from, because, you know, I wanted to have something deeper than just my name or something silly. Like, I really wanted to have like a deep root into what inspires me and what kind of keeps me going creatively.
Mm-hmm. And that was the memory of your cousin and friend, Tony, what inspired mm-hmm. you and kept you going. Okay. So I know that before you founded Two Tony Productions, or maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong on the timeline here, but you had another business as a wedding photographer.
So, yeah. So actually the wedding stuff sort of came as things developed with my career after college. Yeah. So I started doing like wedding videography a lot. And I did that for many, many years, and just got completely burned out on everything. And it led to kind of a little bit of like, there's some depression and stuff that came as a result of it, which also kind of coincided with like the ending of a long-term relationship I was in throughout high school and college. So it was a lot of just kind of like, I guess, bad energy that was just kind of flowing from doing weddings and kind of seeing the same things over and over again. It got kind of taxing on the soul, so to speak.
That's interesting. Okay, so I kind of want to talk a little bit about that, because it seems like that would be a conflict. It sounds like you started making a lot of money, right, at this, as I'm looking at your bio. So it's like you were making six figures.
Yeah. It was really good money.
Yeah. And so when you talk about the emotional taxation, whatever, you know what I mean. Was it all of the stress and emotions that you were witnessing that were happening within like the wedding? Or was it like the stress of you as a videographer, photographer, having to just do the job?
I think it was a lot of factors with it. I think there's just a lot of just anxiety that was going like into the day itself. Cause I mean, for me, like I'm the type of person who like, I don't want to forget anything. I don't want to miss anything while I'm actually filming. So like just going into the event itself, I'd always be like running mental hoops, because I'd be like, all right, do I have all this packed up? Do I have everything I need? You know, blah, blah, blah. And then on the day of, it's just like, it's a lot of chaos, you know, you're just running around trying to get everything and make sure you're not missing any events. And when you're doing it by yourself, like sometimes you're also running between, you know, the ceremonies at one location, then the receptions at another. Sometimes you're filming the prep, which is at an even other location. Mm-hmm. So it's just like 8 to 10 hours of a day that is just nonstop, like go, go, go. And it just all around just became this sort of entity that was just everything that I didn't want it to be, like all the anxiety, all the like physical labor involved, like all those things. It just became this like beast where, sure, I was making like money. It got me in a place where I could buy like the house I have now and, you know, a lot of great things. But at the same time, it was like all of my attention and energy was going into it. I wasn't able to create anything. Right. Yeah, because if you like sit down and look, like I did a short film right after college in 2012, and then I didn't do anything again creatively until 2018, you know, because that whole timeline was just pretty much head first in the weddings, and that was all my focus would allow me to do.
Was that so the wedding business, because it was your own business, right? Was the motivation or the intention to nourish your creativity when you started that or to earn money?
I think it was really just at that point in my life, like after I graduated, because like throughout college and then early after graduating, there was a lot of people around me that sort of questioned my like decision to do that, to do film. And I think there's a lot of like motivation for me to sort of prove people to people around me that like I could make this a successful career.
Yeah.
And what kind of opened up was the wedding side of things. And I think that was the first kind of like chord I could grab onto. So I think the motivation in a big way was, you know, of course to make money, but at the same time to sort of show people that like, look, this is, you know, this is me having a successful career. This is me, you know, I'm buying a house because of this. I'm buying, you know, getting a new car because of this. So it was kind of almost a pride thing, honestly, to just be like, hey, you can have a film degree and make money. Look, I'm not just like some starving artist or something like that, you know?
That's interesting. Like that validation of my degree is actually worthy. Yeah. I mean, I get that because I majored in music. So, and you know, people were saying, well, like, what the heck are you going to do with right?
Yeah, it's
music or English, like English was like my second major. So I can relate to that. And then just wanting to prove that all of this time and effort that I put into this degree was actually worth it because look, I'm using it in this way or whatever. Right. So that's, I mean, it's good that you were able to find an area of a career that you could actually use your film knowledge. But at the same time, it's kind of sad that it was soul draining. I think that that experience, though, eventually it was not all in vain because every experience is a learning experience. And it seems like you learned a lot from that, right? Not just about film, but just about life in yourself. And what it is that you really want and what you value. What do you value? Did you learn any of that while you were?
Yeah. So, I mean, just going through the experience of it all, like, you know, I got to meet so many different types of people and experience a lot of different, you know, types of events through weddings, like seeing different cultures and everything like that.
Yeah.
So I think what I really took away from it was just knowing what like I kind of didn't want in life and knowing like the ways in which I didn't want to be like successful in life, I guess. Cause I mean, you know, I could have just really like kept riding the wave. Like, I mean, I was just pretty much in referral zone after a certain point of just like, I didn't have to fish out for work or anything like that.
And that's what everyone wants, right?
Yeah, like that's what I mean. It was just it was on autopilot. Like I totally could have just like really kept going. But I think for me, like I remember I had a conversation with somebody who helped out with my senior thesis film, and they were asking me sort of like what I was up to and everything. And, you know, I told them about how much I was doing the wedding things and all that, and their response was no like congrats or anything. It was actually like, oh, that's really sad because you had like a lot of talent. I always like will say I appreciate those words because that was kind of a big part of the wake up call for me. That was like, you know what, like I think you're right. Like, I think, you know, I can put all this energy and focus into it and keep being successful in the business, or I can sit back and say, hey, wait a second. You know, what was the reasoning initially why I got into this, which was to tell and create stories?
Okay.
And,
so when you,
and that got me back onto it.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. So when you sat down and you came like face to face with your real intention was to create stories. How then did you decide to, I'm going to start my own production? Was that like the instant next thought, or did you do some like work for other production companies, or how did that happen?
I mean, you know, over the years I had dabbled in like helping with small, like creative endeavors. Like I had done some music video work with some friends and even did some music video work myself. But yeah, it was finally in like 2018 when I sat down and, you know, between that conversation and then also finding out that in a few years' time, I'm definitely going to need to get like heart surgery because I have like a heart condition I was born with. And that was another piece of it, just realizing like, man, life is really short. You only have so much time to really get your stories out there. So I sat down with myself and just said, like, this is what we got to do. And yeah, I kind of just said, I don't have a script. I don't have anything. I just know I want to make like a creative piece. So I just sort of found a few people that could help out with it. Some like local actors and stuff like that. And just kind of sat down and spent about like a week and a half of just filming some stuff and made like what I could kind of call like experimental style short film. And that was my like first step back into the world of it all. And that got me like back on track in a lot of ways.
How did it feel to create that? Did you find that you were in a different energetic space and that you felt like you're in your zone as you were creating that film?
Yeah, like I felt completely different. It's interesting how like you can do sort of a day job or something that you don't really enjoy and can feel like so beat down by the end of the day. But, you know, something like producing and directing this like short film, even though it was like just as taxing, if not more physically than a wedding would be, I was just like super energized at the end of the day. It felt great because it was exactly what I wanted to do. And I felt like this is what I need to be doing. And so throughout, like, even though I wasn't like eating right or doing any of those things, I still just felt like great throughout the whole experience.
And is that when you decided to start Two Tony Productions?
So that was really like what I would say was the step of getting Two Tony Productions like away from anything involving non-creative work. So prior to that, like everything was still under that like umbrella. But this was my way of, you know, kind of like nudging myself out of that zone. And it took a while. Like it wasn't really until last year that I finally feel like I got myself enough away that now I don't get any kind of calls or messages or emails or anything about weddings anymore. And I feel pretty happy about that because I'm like, okay, I know I've done that step correct to sort of get myself out of that world as much as possible.
Well, you know, I'm wondering also, and I meant to ask you, the stress of the wedding stuff, how much of how big a part did your relationship play in that? Because if you broke up with someone but you're still going to all these weddings, I mean, I would feel kind of sad. Did you experience any of that? Yeah,
definitely. That was a huge part of it. It was really fun, you know, while I was with that person, because we would go together to a lot of them and film them together and sort of have like a chill time, because, you know, you get food. It can be fun when you're like kind of working with someone else. But yeah, once that was over, it was like, you know, because that was a 7-year high school sweetheart style relationship. So yeah, it was like going to those weddings and stuff was hugely taxing, and it took a long, long time to sort of get out of that zone of just feeling like, wow, you know, here I am trying to figure this stuff out myself, and I'm sitting down watching people like, you know, having their happiest day of their lives together, getting married and doing that whole thing. So yeah, there was a little bit of like, not jealousy, but maybe some bitterness and jadedness that, that played out throughout the years too, that didn't help.
Yeah. Did you learn anything about yourself after that breakup and then having gone through all these weddings, anything about yourself spiritually or emotionally that you've learned and have taken into your future or other relationships since then?
Yeah, I feel like I've really been able to hone down like what I do and don't want in life. I feel like especially with that first relationship, I was sort of like, you know, whatever that person was sort of doing with their lives and stuff, I felt like I wasn't really being like my true kind of individual self. Mm-hmm. So over the years, I've definitely learned like that it's really important to that I want to keep that individuality, but I also want to have somebody that can complement that. Mm-hmm. And so through like, you know, watching different couples and stuff and weddings and then also my own, you know, dates and things like that I've gone on with people, I feel like I've really learned what I do and don't want and how to really figure out the signs of when a person doesn't really match up with that side of me a lot more quickly than I used to, too.
Yeah, that's a good lesson. That's a good lesson. Okay, so you're making films with the two Tony productions. Mm-hmm. What is it, since now you're a filmmaker, what did you learn about the process of storytelling that you feel is so powerful? Like, why, after having made stories yourselves, what is it about a story that really pulls people in? Why do we love stories?
I think, you know, of course there's the easy answer of like stories are kind of like escapist fantasies for us to watch.
Yeah.
But I think what makes for the best stories are the ones that, that really kind of allow someone to place themselves into that role or into that like mm-hmm. place that is created. Mm-hmm. One kind of big thing I learned after going back and making the first short film I did in 2018, I really wanted to make something that was just anti all of these conventions and anti this and anti that. And as I sat down and watched people kind of see the film at these festivals and stuff, I realized that the need for certain elements of storytelling, which really resonated with me. Cause you know, it was like, I was trying to tell a sort of a convoluted story about a person who's like, has this relationship with, well, not a relationship, but is this like mythological kind of creature thing. And there wasn't any kind of explanations or getting people into the world. It just sort of dove right in.
Yeah.
And it really made me realize that like, you know, there is points to why we have exposition or why we have mm-hmm. certain pieces of dialogue that come up in these stories that really help us to get into them more. Mm-hmm. We just need that. Mm-hmm. And so I think through that, and then, you know, more recently I've been doing a lot with film reviews and doing like film criticism for short films and like really small, like indie filmmakers. Mm-hmm. You really start to figure out like, what works and what doesn't work and what's going to allow somebody to be more connected with a character.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, that's the key. Like if you can't really get somebody connected with your characters, then it's just, you could tell the most amazing story around that person, but it's just not going to hook anybody. Mm-hmm. Because it's just, that's the element that I think is one of the most needed points. You just need to have interesting people that invoke the space that you're creating in a film.
Yeah, I was going to say when you were talking, or I was thinking that it's really about an audience being able to relate or connect to someone in that film. Like I feel like we really want to see ourselves up there in some way, mm-hmm. right? And so how can you, what's like one thing that you do as a filmmaker or a storyteller that helps people relate to character?
Well, I'd say right now, like, you know, I wrote my first like feature script finally last year, and I'm actually working on a second feature script right now. And I think like what you really have to do is you have to for me, a lot of it involves like creating moments of like empathy for a character. So I feel like, you know, let's say you have a main character and you want people to like them, then, you know, you have to create situations where you're that character is showing that like they're worth any kind of empathy from the audience. So like, you know, if they're standing at a crosswalk and there's a old lady or something like that, and they help her across the crosswalk, you know, like things, it's like, that's a nice person. You know, I don't want anything bad to happen to them. So I think a lot of it is that. And then I think a lot of it too is, I think creating like challenges that are really challenging to your main characters is something of you see it, but I feel like a lot of times it's kind of a lost art too.
Yeah.
I feel like people don't want to do that because, you know, it's tough to watch, and it can be tough to write. Like you love your characters. You don't want them to get hurt or have to do something that's really tough. But I think it's important because, again, it's just like when you're watching that on screen, you're like, oh my goodness, like I just want them to get through this so bad. Like, how are they going to do it? And it creates like that tension and everything. So yeah, I think if you're not creating situations where you're showing that this character is a good person or is interesting in some way, you're missing a lot of the point. And then if you're not challenging them in like a really strong way, I think it gets sometimes almost boring. And I think that's a big problem with like, that's why it's hard for me to watch a lot of superhero movies, because it's like, come on now, like is Spider-Man not going to save the day? I don't think so. It's just how it goes. Like,
oh, that's funny. You know, I was reading a book I had on the table recently by an editor. His name was Sol Stein, and he also worked with filmmakers. What is that filmmaker's name? Elia Kazan from like the 80s. What am I saying? Like the 50s or 60s or something. I can't remember. But anyways, but he was saying that, you know, in a story, he used that word tension. You want to really draw out the tension for as long as you can, because that's what really keeps the audience engaged in the story, is because, you know, you feel like he said that when we read stories, we want to experience things that we wouldn't really experience in real life, right? Like, so if this were happening to us in real life, or we were experiencing someone in real life going through this, we would just totally like, no, I can't. I don't want to be involved. But when it's in a book or in a film, you don't mind being involved, right? Because there's that space between you. But it is that tension that that really makes the story interesting.
Exactly. Like you don't want to go out tomorrow and climb Mount Everest, but hey,
right.
you want to watch a movie where somebody climbs Mount Everest. Cause that's
And I like how you said, you know, the character, you have to show some you have to get the audience to somehow empathize with them. Like, show, even if it's a horrible character, sometimes horrible characters have these qualities that you see, like the mean guy helping the old lady across the street, and you're like, oh, well, I guess he's not all bad, right? But it's just that it's interesting to when characters are so nuanced like that. Like, there's some good and there's some bad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I, like I said, I think it's, you know, something that a lot of people do have a tendency to miss. I think we get, especially in more modern films, I think we get too caught up on like the concept or trying to do something that's like, oh, it's totally original or it's totally different.
Yeah.
And I think there are films that play up those concepts really well, but I think at its core, it's just like you kind of have to sit down with yourself and realize that, like, you know, stories have been told for millennia, and, you know, the ways in which they're told are pretty consistent across the board. It's really just the fresh coats of paint that we're putting on them. So the more you kind of sit down with yourself and really think about the fundamentals of, like, what makes this movie good or what makes this story really good, the more you can then focus on trying to just tell a good story, but putting your own twist on it instead of just trying to make something that's like, this is something that's never been done before. You know, I feel like that is just something, especially in film, I think a lot of people get way too caught up in.
That's interesting. So then after having all this experience with film, since you were a kid watching Godzilla, Is your favorite movie still Godzilla, or do you have a new favorite film? Like, what do you like to watch?
Well, I try to find, like, I like a lot of foreign cinema. And I really got through college. I really got involved with like the French New Wave cinema of the 60s.
Yes.
Yeah. So Jean-Luc Godard is one of my favorite directors, and I love his work so much. Which is funny because I talk about all these fundamentals, but then you get in the French New Wave and they're just like, screw that. We're going to do whatever we want.
Yeah.
It really like flipped the script on everything. So yeah, I really enjoy a lot of his work nowadays. Ozu, which is a classical like Japanese director. Mm. I really like a lot of his work. So I just try to find things that are just like I'm the guy who's, you know, I guess I don't want to sound too pretentious, but I'm like the dude who just goes on Google and is like, what are the obscure movies that came out last year or things like that? Mm-hmm. I'm always trying to find like the under the radar stuff, because I think those are the ones that are taking a little more risks. They're trying different things. And, you know, I just enjoy like trying to watch things that kind of are against the grain a little bit. So yeah, that's really where I kind of fall these days.
Mm-hmm. You know, as a kid, I did not like watching foreign films because it was just so taxing to have to look at the subtitles and pay attention to what's happening on the screen. I felt like I was always doing this, like subtitles. But as an adult, I've really come to love, especially the French. I'm not as educated as you are, but I love the French films from like the 60s. Mm-hmm. There's one I really love called Elevator to the Gallows, I think it's called. It's just, okay. I love, because it's a different culture. It's mm-hmm. a totally different culture. And the storytellers in that era and in these other countries have a very interesting way of telling their stories that you don't always get from American films.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what's so fun about it. I mean, one of the more recent like French directors that I really like is Quentin Dupuis. Mm. I don't know. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. But like he had that film a few years ago called Rubber, which is just about like a tire that comes to life and starts killing people. You know, it's just like off the wall stuff like that that is just fascinating to me.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. I have to. It's called Rubber.
Rubber, yeah, it's great. Oh, it's so good.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so let's talk about your poetry, because mm-hmm. I know you also write poetry. Is this something new?
No, so poetry is actually the older of the disciplines. That really started after kind of the loss of Tony and everything. I kind of found that as a kid, I was just kind of like, that was sort of my way of going through like grieving and things like that, was just sitting down and writing small little poems, or mm-hmm. I guess maybe even pseudo like journaling in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's always what poetry started kind of meant, was like this personal sort of like outlet of just getting emotions or thoughts or feelings on a page. And I never really thought it would be anything. Like I never thought I'd put it in a book or anything like that. That's why it kind of took so long to get here. Cause I just never felt like, I guess, kind of confident about it for a very, very, very long time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so what you did, you took the big step and you published, right? A poetry book, or is it one or two?
So it's a single collection of poetry that I've been writing for the last like 5 or so years now. And I just, yeah, finally last year with everything going on, I was just had more time to sort of sit down with myself. And I was like, look, I got all this stuff that I've written. It's just kind of collecting dust on the phone, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I just started, I put it in a big Word document and broke it down and was like, hey, it's just a matter of figuring it out. And it was really just a couple Google searches from going from, hey, I got all this stuff, how do I put it in a book, to then finding all the pieces to make it happen.
Wow, that's like, just talking to you right now, I could feel generational difference. Because when you said it's collecting dust in my phone, I'm like, wait, what the heck does that mean? But
exactly.
Back to like, you know, in my day, even now, I don't really use my phone to write. I still do a paper, like an old person, paper on the computer. So that's just so interesting. And how you can just now go to Google and mm-hmm. how do I do this, right? That's so cool. So you self-published?
Yes.
How was that process for you?
I mean, overwhelming for a long time. And that's sort of, again, another thing that kind of kept me from doing it, because I thought about it before, like years prior and things. But as you start getting into it, you're like, man, this just seems like a lot.
Yeah.
And what really helped was just, again, like just sitting down and researching it and just taking it like step by step. I think a big part of my issues in years past was sort of not breaking things down and sort of just seeing the wall and just being like, man, I can't climb that wall. Mm-hmm. But as I've gotten older, I really realized that, like, no, it's not about just scaling the wall in one fail swoop. It's really about like step by step by step.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I got to that level, I was like, okay, today this is what we're gonna do, and tomorrow this is what we're, you know. So each day I was like getting a little bit closer to that goal. Mm-hmm. And that helped like 10,000 times over.
Mm-hmm. Were you nervous about the reception of it?
Yeah, because I mean, the poetry is like super duper like personal stuff. I mean, you know, about relationships, late night rendezvous, you know, everything in between.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I was really kind of nervous about how it was going to go over. And at first it was like, it was kind of tepid. Like I put it out there and I didn't kind of build up any hype around it. I just sort of hit the publish button one day and was like, well, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first kind of things that was at first a negative, but then ended up being a positive was, so I don't want to say this was who did it, but I had gotten a message from someone out of the blue on Facebook that was just basically saying, your poetry book is terrible. Mm-hmm. I really like, you're never going to like have a relationship with somebody again. You should probably be basically calling me like a homosexual and all this kind of really nasty stuff in a message. And my response was just like, well, I appreciate your feedback. And for about 2 seconds, I really kind of got down on myself. And then I was like, you know,
Daniel, this was someone who they felt you were referencing them in the book.
So it was somebody that I'd never met before that private messaged me out of the blue.
Okay.
And so if I was to be, you know, surmising here, I would assume that it was somebody in my past, maybe an ex, that had put a friend up to something. So basically I screenshotted it, made sure nobody could see whose names it was or anything, and just kind of put it out there and said like, look, feedback is feedback and all that kind of stuff, and kind of tried to put like a positive spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing you know, it went, I guess, as semi-viral on my Facebook feed as it could. And I ended up selling like 20 copies of the book in a single day as a result of that. And then people started coming around and really like writing good reviews on Amazon and stuff for the book. So, you know, since then, it's been a pretty good response from those who have picked it up.
So that kind of out of the blue person really helped you.
Yeah, like I said, it was a negative that turned into a positive inevitably.
I love stories like that when, yeah, something negative turns into something positive. So tell us about this feature film. Or you just finished a script for a feature film?
Yeah, so I wrote one last year that was sort of what I would say was my cathartic, like, final getting over of my past relationships and sort of writing a story that kind of is adjacent to it, but not exactly, you know, how everything went with that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really great because it was a good like therapeutic process. And it was also my kind of entry point to writing a feature film script. And then just this past week, I had this idea for a feature that I've been kicking around. And I have a friend over in the UK who does like stop motion animation.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that this was like a perfect matchup for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat down last week and pretty much over the course of like 7 days, I wrote 60 pages of this feature film script as like a rough outline of everything. And now we're kind of just discussing it, and I'm going to keep like pushing with it to get to those 90 pages. But yeah, it was a great process of just 7 days writing almost a full feature film script.
Wow. So how do you feel about the feature film script actually becoming a feature film?
Well, you know, again, it's a big process.
Yeah.
So I've already had the opportunity to late last year, I did like a pitch meeting with like three different like producers through this like film festival, mm-hmm. which was like, that was a huge learning experience. So, yeah. You know, I got to talk with people who produce like $1 million movies and stuff like that, who were kind of giving me feedback. Mm-hmm. So since then, yeah, it's just been, I've kind of been talking to different people, trying to get the elements all connected. It's, you know, because it's a bear, like it's just a really big push, especially for a film script that is not really, doesn't really have like a happy ending. It's kind of like a tough drama film, which is just really hard to get produced, because I think there's just a lot of that kind of content out there. And you have to just prove that like this film is going to have like a return on investment. And there's just a lot of like business acumen that comes into it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's all a learning experience, which kind of brings me to one of my final questions for you. And that is, what advice would you give yourself, give to your, let's say your age 10 or 15 years ago, what advice would you give to that person?
I would tell that person that like to be patient first off, because I think that was always a big thing. And to really just like to again, break things down, take them step by step, because I think a lot of the false starts that I've had over the years really involve like me trying to create something, then getting into my own head about it, getting frustrated, feeling like it's not good enough, and then giving up eventually. When you really just have to like, if you take it step by step, you kind of like realize when you're getting to that point, and you can stop yourself and say, okay, you know, I've written 2, 3, 4, 5 pages of something today. This is good. And then just kind of like let your brain sort of wind down and maybe do something else. Like I like to really go for a run or a bike ride. And that's sort of my mind clearing event. And then come back to it either the next day or maybe in a few hours when you're kind of feeling recharged about it. And you know, I always find that like that really takes away that inner voice of like, is this good enough? Is what you're writing really junk, or are you doing something good? Mm-hmm. It makes all that kind of go to the wayside for a little bit.
That's good advice. Be patient and take things step by step. Yeah. This has been wonderful, Daniel. Tell us where we can find you.
Yeah, so the easiest place is the website, which is 2tonyproductions.com. And then I'm on Instagram, at 2tonyproductions. And then, yeah, I mean, pretty much the hub is the website. That'll take you to all my like personal socials as well.
Well, thank you so much for joining me.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed this. Yeah, it's been wonderful. Thank you.
I appreciate Daniel's honesty and his willing to talk about his relationship, his first publication experience, his first experience making a film when he didn't quite have all the answers or know exactly how he was going to do it. I appreciated him sharing about his cousin, the loss of his cousin, like all the things that are typically difficult for people to talk about: love, loss, heartbreak. I appreciate that because it just reminded me that we can recover from heartbreak if we can muster up the courage, if we can surround ourselves with people who are willing to hold us up when we are feeling incredibly low and down, then the heartbreak, the loss, the sadness, beautiful things can come from all of that. Beautiful things can grow out of the pain. So if you want to learn more about Daniel and his 2Tony Productions company, then please visit his website and visit his social media. In the meantime, visit zazo.com and sign up for my newsletter. I have some new wallpaper for January, free wallpaper for your desktop and phone. So you can check that out. You can also follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter at Ebony Haywood, and I'm on Instagram and Facebook at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for tuning in, and tune in tomorrow for the inspiration of the week. All right. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.